suspect reactivity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
720 WGN, 1209. Good Friday afternoon, everyone. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand one more time this week to wrap it on up. Steve back on Monday here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Going to start things off with one of my good friends, Stephanie Lule from Block Club Chicago. Stephanie, how's it going?
John, how are you? Happy Friday. We made it.
We certainly did. It's been a crazy week. We'll talk about the teachers in a moment, but let's start with something that I think unifies a lot of us. Well, if it's not religion, it's beer. A crazy story, a cool story out of North Center about a pastor who's trading church for a brewery instead.
Yeah, John, I got to tell you, I love this story. It's just so indicative of like what we're doing here at Black Club, digging up these kind of stories. So there's this pastor, Brent Raska, who was running a small suburban church, and, you know, like a lot of churches that we see in Chicago and the surrounding communities, the you know, parishioners were dwindling, and the church sadly ended up closing. But, you know, he kind of took it as a time to say, well, what else am I passionate about besides the pulpit? And he had been homebrewing for a long time and decided to, turn in his
robes or whatever it might be.
Yeah, his robes, right? To turn them in. And instead, he's now opening up a brewery in North Center called Burning Bush Brewery.
And I imagine, like you said, he kind of had this passion already. And sometimes we all need to push out the door. I guess it's no different than someone who loses any job or decides to change things. It's just so unique that you go from a pastor to a brewer.
Right, but it's interesting. He said, you know, that we should remember that brewing does have some, you know, that monks, you know, were some of the first to brew beer, right?
Uh-huh.
Back in the, you know, like forever ago, right?
Yes. You don't need to pick a century. It's back in time. Yeah, we get it.
Right, the medieval times,
yes.
We should say. And he said, you know, that, you know, operating the tap room isn't going to be a lot different than it was running a congregation or, you know, running a church, because fellowship, you know, happens around beer too. And he plans to do a lot for the community, coat drives and things like that, that he also would be doing if he was still running a church.
It doesn't take someone that goes to Mass every single Sunday to get the name transfer there. Burning Bush Brewery, obviously,
yes.
A reference to the Old Testament.
That's right, Moses and the burning bush. And, you know, we should say, John, we know plenty of people who treat beer like a religion, so they will want to check this place out.
That's really cool stuff. All right, we've been talking about it all week, and Ryan's got it covered in news, too, this teacher strike. Just the latest that you guys have, I know you guys published a story this morning. Things changed so quickly. The union
right.
Now hoping school might resume Monday. That's certainly the hope. I guess just broader, I don't know how you guys felt like in the newsroom. I think a lot of folks thought that this would be a shorter strike, at least before it started, but both sides really seem to have become entrenched, but we may have been making some progress here in the last 48 hours or so.
Yes, we may. You know, we'll have to stay tuned. I'm hearing all different things. So, but that's, you know, that's something that's happening in the moment, and you should stay. Stay if you've got a kid in CPS, you've got to, you know, want to stay up to date on Black Club and other news websites. Will all be following this because it impacts all CPS parents and kids
mm-hmm.
and teachers, right? And you know, also yesterday we had a story about striking teachers downtown.
Oh, yeah.
who were actually being spat upon by people who were in the Border Trade Building. Kelly Bauer talked to dozens of teachers who experienced this and were kind of horrified by it.
Well, right, they thought originally that, I don't know, if maybe it's raining a little bit, maybe it's bird droppings or something, but they were pretty adamant that it was spit, and then also some almost like leaflets sent out too from the Board of Trade.
Right, that had happened earlier in the week. You know, that and these leaflets said that they wanted teachers to work 12 months a year, and they wanted full-time teachers, so teachers were up in arms about that too.
Yeah, I can't imagine. So, look, I was inconvenienced by, like a lot of folks, by the walking teachers going through the loop. That's part of what, you know, disruption, civil disruption is all about, and the discourse that we have in our country and community. It might be a minor inconvenience, but at the end of the day, whatever side you come on, spit it out, people. That's about nine steps too far.
Yeah, it's very disgusting.
All right, let's talk about something a little bit more fun. Cards Against Humanity, of course, based out of here in Chicago. Well, I don't know if they're, I mean, I know they got an office here. They're based entirely out of Chicago, right?
Yes, right. They have very cool offices and theater. I recommend checking it out if you ever get the chance. But yes, they are opening up a game cafe in the old Margie's Candy building on the border of Logan and Logan Square in Bucktown, mm-hmm. And it looks amazing. I'm really, they're just building it out now, but looks like it's going to be a blast. There's also going to be two game rooms or escape rooms there on site.
Is it only for Cards Against Humanity once you actually get on the table games, or are there going to be other ones that people can play?
No way. We're going to have the classics like Scrabble, Monopoly, of course, Cards Against Humanity, but also like they're going to focus on some indie games that are from all over the world too. So people can come there, explore the game vault when it opens, and while they're eating and drinking, play from, you know, choose from hundreds of games to play.
I'm looking at one of the photos on Block Club Chicago of the food that they have or that they aim to have. And if you took out the playing cards and the dice there, it looks like something you'd see at like a gourmet restaurant. Is this just their goal? I mean, they're going to be serving food and they want it to be nice stuff too.
Yeah, it's fancy. You know, Aaron McKay from of Schwa is one of the people behind the menu, and it does, like, I'm sure you're looking at the same piece of
yes.
steak as I am, and I want it right now.
Yes. That's awesome yeah. stuff. I'm, you know, the Cards Against Humanity people are always on the forefront of the latest, you know, either trend or they try and do some sort of funny marketing. And I think that they're tapping into something that is really real here in Chicago and really across the country, that younger folks and older folks are looking for experiences, Instagrammable moments. And they seem to be taking that board game and trying to change it into something that's a collective experience where people can kind of gather.
Right, and not only the board game cafe, but also these escape rooms that they're building in the basement. These escape rooms, and then also in Wicker Park, we just had a story yesterday about a indoor mini golf bar that is opening. And I think, you know, we're seeing more and more people do want experiences, not just to belly up to the bar, but also maybe some things to do in their neighborhoods that don't involve drinking, right? Like you could go and have a nice meal here and play a game or visit the escape room and never have a drink. And I think we're seeing more and more millennials focus on other, you know, things that you can do besides just heading to the bar.
Don't tell the pastor that. All right, so Block Club Chicago, remind everyone where it is, why it is, and what they should be doing about it.
Yeah, please check out all of our neighborhood related stories. We have reporters all over the city based in the neighborhoods. We're at blockclubchi.org, and please support us. So, you know, we're digging up these neighborhood stories that you care about.
Stephanie, always great to chat with you. Let's talk soon, okay?
Hey, thanks, John.
Wintrust Business Lunch, John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand. Been in all week. Steve will be back at the controls on Monday. Okay, we're looking forward already. Well, are we looking forward to the 2020 election is coming up, whether you like it or not. One of the biggest voting blocks, well, maybe not the biggest voting block, but certainly one that will have an impact on the election. And, of course, social issues are younger Americans. And it's sometimes hard to gauge exactly what their issues are that they care the most about. But we're joined by Derek Feldman, the founder of Cause and Social Influence Initiative, who put out a really fascinating report. I've just started to kind of dive into it. Derek, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So I find it interesting that some issues have changed over the past year, some issues dropping out of the top five entirely that were near the top. But one thing that when you look at the issues that matter to people, I mean, to the young people in this country, is they are kind of widespread over five issues. It's not like it's one issue is really taking it all. It's that there really are, I don't want to say they're divided, but they have a lot of different things that they care about, and they almost kind of give them similar weight.
They do. That's right. Yeah, if you look at climate, civil rights, racial discrimination, immigration and healthcare. I mean, they're very close in that category, as you mentioned. So big issues right there.
So the issue that kind of fell out, I'm kind of surprised about, was a gun control issue, maybe leading the way where that, and this is the different splits between Gen Z and millennials, the millennials, gun control mattered less to them. I guess maybe that they're further out of high school and college where a lot of these shootings happening. Do we have less shootings here in 2019 so far than 2018? Or did that surprise you that dropped out?
It surprised a little, but I think there are a couple things to keep in mind. It was younger, so the 18 to 24-year-old, that oldest Gen Z, gun safety, gun control was high. It was in that top five. But when you look at the older part of our study, the 25 to 30-year-old, that's the youngest millennial, we saw other issues such as like employment or wage, more of the things that this young population is starting to grapple with as they start to get jobs and so forth.
What were some other things that you took note of or surprised you as you conducted and now are releasing this information?
Yeah, you know, we were specifically looking at what influences their opinions on social issues. And one thing that was very, very clear, fake news. This is the first time that we actually asked around, how does fake news either change your people around you, their opinion on these social issues, and is it even real? And actually 78% of the people in our study believe that fake news exists, and 73% believe that it's going to influence the election next year.
Well, I think that they have some basis for that truth. We see it playing out in Congress this week with interviews with Mark Zuckerberg and certainly what we know about the 2016 election. Of course, a lot of different people have different opinions on what fake news is, but that's not for this program. We're talking about this study in specific. Interesting to me, too, is also how you broke down the difference between social issues and movements. Explain the differences between those and the differences that you found in the results.
Yeah, so there is, when we look at issues broadly, you know, it could be an issue of climate change or an issue of wage or unemployment, immigration. We wanted to see not just is there interest holistically in that particular area, but then the specific movements. Movements that take a certain position one way or another on those issues. So that's why we want to look at those differences. And if you do look at the differences, specifically on movements, what we discover is participation, interest in things like Black Lives Matter, Me Too, human rights, and Medicare for All. So you can kind of see where those positions are on those movements versus just the issues broadly.
One issue that I find fascinating that doesn't get represented in a movement, and maybe this is, I don't know, part of the problem that they're trying to identify, is you don't have a movement per se, a hashtag or something that's really catchy for climate change.
Yes, that is. That, you know, that's an interesting one, too. We've been going back and back to the data to find where that is. But what we discover is this. There's high interest in that issue. But this is a real opportunity for a movement to rise towards the top to get people all behind it even further, whether that's the Green New Deal or other ways in which youth in particular can act in some way, shape, or form. So you're absolutely right.
I find it fascinating that page 6 of your study is from social issue to did action lead to change, this journey from awareness to action. And I guess at the end of the day, do young people in this country feel that whether it's voting, whether it's organizing, whether it's posting on social media, do they feel like they're making a difference?
Well, that was a tough one because this is hard to report out, but they don't. You know, a lot of them didn't know whether or not their participation really made a difference on these important issues. So there's some work to be done by the movements and the social causes and the brands and anybody else behind issues. But one thing to note in this, they felt the way to make the biggest change on this issue is voting. Voting in particular. So 2020 will be an interesting one.
And they are right about that. Thank you very much, Ryan. 720 WGN, the Wintrust Business Lunch, 12:37 on this Friday afternoon. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand. Steve comes back on Monday. The Women's Business Development Center started in 1986. Its goal was to provide program and services to support and accelerate women's business ownership across the area. And here to chat about one of their programs, the Top Shelf Program, is Georgia Marsh. Georgia, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, and I'm very pleased to represent the Women's Business Development Center today, and in particular to be on WGN Wintrust Business Lunch, Wintrust being a very close partner of the Women's Business Development Center, working with us in low to moderate income communities throughout Chicago.
Hey, Georgia, right on brand. We love that. Thank you so much. Okay, let's talk about the retail world. It's a challenging ecosphere of changing to e-commerce. How do brick and mortars really exist still in this market? And you guys are trying to help out with this educational training program.
We are. We had the WBDC had been approached last year by one of our corporate partners, Walgreens Boots Alliance, who is an example of an industry leader wanting to do something for diverse businesses, and had asked us if we could modify one of our curriculum to work specifically with those small businesses that are interested in doing business in the retail market with big box stores, et cetera.
Okay, and how did the program go? How does it work? Who got involved in it?
Well, we were very fortunate to, again, have Walgreens Boots Alliance support us and sponsor us, and True Value was our host. The program ran for 7 weeks from July 11th through August 22nd. It was cohort-based, and it was it was lecture, group discussions, subject matter expertise, questions and answers, and in general, involvement of the 17 businesses that participated.
How big of a help is it to get people in the room talking business, either with each other, with people that are kind of designing the curriculum, to inspire ideas and to motivate people to expand as they grow their businesses?
Well, we were a little bit concerned because we ran this over the summer. But we were very happy that of the 17 businesses, they were all very engaged because, in effect, at the end, they all hope to be able to work with some major corporation and be able to use the skills that they acquired during those 7 weeks to be able to make the contacts that they needed to make. Additionally, many times business people are so busy working in their business that they don't take the time to work on their business. So this was a tremendous opportunity to be able to meet weekly, to bond, and to look at, despite the fact that each of the different businesses was so different, recognizing that they had so much in common and that they could learn from each other and also use each other as a support system.
Okay, so someone listening that maybe isn't quite in the business world or maybe doesn't participate, it might say, this is a bunch of mumbo jumbo here, this is a bunch of lingo. What are some concrete examples of a business that was there, the things that they learned that they can then take out into their real world for application and use to help their business?
One of the clients there was Susie Turno and her sister Kathy Wood of Susie Swirl, which is a frozen dessert company specializing in frozen yogurt and sorbet. They decided that they wanted to take their venture to the next level and wanted to be able to work with a new product that they had, Susie Swirl Spiked Pints, which in fact is alcohol-infused frozen yogurt. They were not exactly sure how they would be able to sell this to the retail world. So what the class offered for them is insights and support from like-minded people who had similar questions. Learning how to write the perfect capability statement and capability deck, which is what you introduce yourself to when you're introducing yourself to a corporation. What are you able to do? How are you able to do it? What is the capacity that you have, and what differentiates you in the field? And it helped her understand how to work with buyers, because selling is not always so easy. You may have a product and you may have a service, but understanding how you present that to someone is a whole other matter.
So what's next for the Women's Business Development Center? Now the Top Shelf is done, not to move on from it, but I imagine you guys are looking at either, are you going to do Top Shelf again, or are you going to come up with some new curriculum? What is the next kind of area that you guys want to focus and help folks out with?
Well, Top Shelf was very successful, and it exceeded the expectations, I think, both of the WBDC, our clients, and our sponsors. But it was directed to the retail industry. So we have many different clients in different industries, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's construction, whether it's professional services. Each one requires a different skill set in terms of selling. And so we're going to be working to develop and change the curriculum and customize it for those industries as well.
I find it interesting, and I just want to note that as I'm looking for the application for Top Shelf or the discussion before the program started, that you guys are a program that, while women is in your name, title, or the organization, you're open to a diverse group of business owners, male or female.
Absolutely. Over the years, while the original focus of the WBDC in 1986 was women, we certainly, as all organizations and small businesses, which is what we are as well, have had to change, look at the demographics, look at the environments. So while women is in our name, we serve all populations, diversity, geographics, and we welcome everyone into the center.
Well, WBDC stands for Women's Business Development Georgia. I don't know if anyone's ever told you. Sounds like a great radio station, WBDC.
Well, it is. We try and provide as much information as education, not unlike WGN. We don't have sports,
right,
but we do have everything else.
All right, there you go. Georgia, thanks so much and for joining us, and good luck, okay?
Thank you very much for having us.
And you can find out more at WBDC.org for all their great programs and some more information and testimonials. It's a great website, really easy to navigate. If you're someone that's in that business world and you want to discover new ways to continue to get better and grow, WBDC.org is a great place to go. Now time for the Wintrust Business Minute here on WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Has Uber or Lyft driving kind of become your thing? For many people, it's a great way to add a few hours of work onto a day and help out with money. And if you're in the mood, a great way to talk someone's ear off for a short amount of time, whether they like it or not. But for Lyft drivers, if you're ready to take that job to the next level, then Lyft is helping out by adding 220 new jobs to the city. These jobs will focus on the Divvy bike side of the business, because we're a biking city and it's a great way to get around. But 20 of those jobs will be focusing on a new driver center on Goose Island. Gotta make that money. And the Chicago Symphony Orchestra would probably like to see some more money themselves, because ticket sales were down this year by $4.7 million. $4.7 million. Tickets for a regular orchestra performance on November 1st range from $38 to $248. If people were only paying for the expensive tickets to every performance, they'd have to sell nearly 19,000 extra tickets. And everyone's watching Netflix these days, so it's harder to get people out of their house. And honestly, if I had the choice between Netflix and the orchestra, I'm sitting on my couch. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
720 WGN. Happy Friday. We're almost done with Wintrust Business Lunch for the week. But before we wrap things up officially, let's check in the Cranes newsroom with Stephanie Goldberg. Stephanie, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I got to break down this story that you guys have on up there about Chicago area hospital chains trying to save money, reducing costs, and improving care, some doing better than others.
That is very true. So under the Affordable Care Act, the federal government created this Accountable Care Organization program, and hospitals and doctors groups and other healthcare providers create these ACOs, as they're called, Accountable Care Organizations. And these groups are intended to save money, reduce Medicare spending, and also improve the quality of care. They're not all doing so hot.
Right. Now, is it meant to reduce the spending for the hospital and or the patients or both, or kind of a trickle-down effect that it eventually saves everybody money?
The trickle-down is the eventual goal, right? But the primary goal right now is to save Medicare money, since they're the payer who's covering the services that are being provided.
And it makes sense, but I can't even believe Northwestern Medicine saving only $10,000. That seems like a blip in the books.
Yeah, that's for sure. They've been around for a while, so I'm sort of curious about why that is. They didn't comment for the story, so I don't have much more color to add there, but I can tell you some new groups who came out of the gate this year and did really well. Like Rush, for example, they've been doing some value-based care, which for those that don't know or haven't heard that buzz phrase, is the new way of paying for medicine. So we used to pay for volume, now we pay for value. That's the goal, at least. They started their Medicare ACO this year. They saved $3.7 million their first year.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty good. Is it, again, how exactly do they save the money? Is it about pooling the resources in the right way, connecting different departments in order to eliminate redundancies?
Yeah, essentially, yes. I mean, the broader answer is much more broad,
yes,
if you will. like I was talking to the folks over at Advocate, and, you know, they were saying one of the things that they're really beefing up is addressing social determinants by connecting patients with community resources and making sure everyone has what they need in order to stay healthy. So, you know, maybe it's food insecurity is driving some health concerns, so things like that. But, yeah, there's really no one right answer or no one answer, but there are lots of things hospitals are trying. So the program is succeeding on that front.
You didn't hear from Northwestern. Were there any other ones that you got comments from, either the ones that are doing well or the ones that aren't, in terms of the motivation behind why they are or not as successful as others?
Yeah, North Shore had a pretty interesting, they had some pretty interesting comments around this. So they just entered in 2018 as well. So in their first year, they didn't do so well. They spent, I think it was about $9 million more than they were expected to, they spent more $9 million more than they were expected to spend. So no savings from them. But they said it was so important for them to get in to the value-based care game now, because this is the way that the healthcare industry is moving. And, you know, like, let's get in there and let's make the mistakes now before the stakes are higher, right? So it's all about learning, and it's about sort of leaning into the new way that the healthcare industry is moving.
I was just going to say, there. I mean, like anything, like any business, I imagine this is a little heady for some people that not are in the medical world like me, but if it's like any other sort of business thing, that the time you enter into a new venture or a new way of organizing things, there is a learning curve, and year to year, as long as you're seeing positive results, I guess that's something to hang your hat on.
I think so, yeah.
All right. That is Stephanie Goldberg joining us from the Cranes Newsroom. Have a great weekend, Stephanie.
You too.
And where
Thanks
can people
so much.
Find more information about all these stories? Let's give out the website one more time.
Head to chicagobusiness.com.
All right. Easy peasy. Thanks so much, Stephanie.
Thank you.